Welcome to Copenhagen Daily, reporting from the Bella Center in Copenhagen, on what is undoubtedly the most important meeting in human history.
Many other people to send a message to world leaders who are at Copenhagen to get together and agree a credible deal for the planet to reduce carbon emissions. And I'm here to send a message to them that we really need to see some action fast. You know, the science is there, the science is believable, and we know that it's we know what's happening, and we can see the warning signs that the planet's giving us.
We're standing shoulder to shoulder with the poorest people in this world, the people on the front line of climate change. Today, there's one person amongst us who isn't standing shoulder to shoulder with the poorest people in the world. Ed Miliband, the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change, is marching today. But he's advocating policy changes that will devastate the lives of those people around the world, that will wipe out their existence potentially. He's saying that it's okay for the EU to cut its carbon emissions by 30% by 2020. But he knows the science. He knows that only gives a 50% chance of avoiding dangerous climate change. We say to Mr. Miliband, 50% chance, a 50-50 chance might be great if you're backing a horse at Epsom. But if it's about saving the lives of billions of people around the world, 50-50 isn't good enough. We need to do more.
I'm from Africa.
What was he saying? What was he saying?
And we are really, really disappointed that these governments could sit down behind the back of the rest of the international community to concoct some kind of political deals that are wishy-washy, that don't recognize the urgency of the climate challenge, that doesn't recognize that we are at the brink of a major, major crisis, more than what we've ever experienced, that governments could sit down and prepare that kind of document that doesn't, even before negotiations started, it's a big slap in the face of the world. And it makes nonsense of us coming here to talk under the United Nations process. This is a way of disuniting the nations, driving a wedge between nations, dividing to rule. It's colonial. It's unacceptable, and it's actually very embarrassing.
I think we all have been told that there is no plan B for Copenhagen, and that we have to work very hard, you know, on the documents on the table. So the fact that we have this 10-page document shows that they have been working on a plan B. And most of the developing countries that I have spoken to do not know at all about this text. So they feel shortchanged in that they had no say. They were not invited to contribute to a tax that may be parachuted down on them later on this week by the ministers or by the presidents, and they would not have had enough time to look at it. So the process is what is bothering many, but also the substance, because the tax calls for a 50% cut in global emissions by 2050, and it says that the developed countries are willing to cut by 80%. So my calculations show that if this is being proposed, the developing countries would have to cut their emissions by at least 60% per capita, or about the same as the developed countries, and that will bring their per capita emissions of greenhouse gases to about 2 tons per person by 2050. Whereas a country like the United States, which now has 20 tons per capita, would go down to about 4 tons.
We demand climate justice! 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 We demand climate justice!
We demand
climate justice!
We demand
climate justice!
We demand
climate justice!
We demand
climate justice! We demand climate justice! We demand.
What is civil disobedience? Civil disobedience is when you break a law, basically. And you break a law because you feel that it's an unjust law. And you feel you have a moral duty that goes beyond the laws of your nation to try to change that law and to break it and to stand up for what you think is right. And it's becoming incredibly important right now because our laws and our system, almost everywhere in the world, is set up in a way to allow people to pollute the atmosphere to the point where we get runaway climate change and we cause enormous sufferings.
What we need to see is about 45% cut from rich countries by 2020 if we're going to return atmospheric levels of CO2 to 350 parts per million and stop runaway climate change. But the EU are talking about a 30% cut in emissions for rich countries as being the most that the conference could hope for, really. And even the European target is watered down. It includes an allowance for around 50% of that target to be made by offsets. So the rich country cut on the table is about 15%, and we need about 45%, so a long way to go. Then there's the issue of money. Hundreds of billions of dollars are required to enable poor countries to adapt to the impacts of climate change and to help them develop in a low-carbon way. Rich countries have an outstanding commitment to do this under the United Nations Framework Convention, which goes back to 1992. But right now, the EU, the supposed leaders in this game, have not guaranteed any new money at all. Currently, there is a danger that climate finance will simply come out of the existing aid budgets. Also, the countries of the majority poor world have everything weighed against them. They don't have the person power that the rich world has. And now, the rich are playing dirty. Not only did they put pressure on Algeria to remove the head of the African bloc after they took a widely applauded stand at the recent talks in Barcelona, it appears that rich countries have now put pressure on the government of the Philippines to remove Bernarditas Muller, one of the leading negotiators of the G77 plus China negotiating bloc, which represents around 135 developing countries. And it goes from bad to worse. The US, the UK and Denmark got together and wrote something that has been termed the Copenhagen Accords. It was a draft agreement circulated to just a handful of rich country governments and was leaked to The Guardian in the last few days. This has caused an uproar at the talks. It's been widely criticised. Basically, what it means is that rich countries want to foist on the poor majority world their version of the deal, which has everything in it that favours them and ignores everything that the developing world has been talking about at these talks for the last 2 years. It's deeply undemocratic, to say the least. The good news is that Friends of the Earth, Europe, have issued a report saying that Europe can meet its target of 40% by 2020, and they've shown how. The other good news is that the EPA in the United States, the Environmental Protection Agency, has announced its intention to use its existing authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate large sources of carbon, such as coal-fired power plants, directly. And a report published today also by the Centre for Biological Diversity shows how this existing authority could allow Obama to carry through a programme of action under existing legislation that would be consistent with the current science of 350 parts per million. So it is still possible. It still can be done.
This is a message that Stephen Whitelock, who's aged about 10, wrote. I think it's very cute. Dear world leaders, please stop cutting down trees, as they are very good at keeping carbon dioxide out of the air. I also think that you should persuade rich countries like Luxembourg to give money to countries like Africa or Brazil. Finally, I would like to say, watch less TV. Who cares who wins the FIFA World Cup? The reason why I'm writing this letter is because I don't want to wake in heaven. Think of the children. Yours sincerely, Stephen Whitelock.
Okay, this is take three of the Climate Express. Are the Climate Chorus ready? Okay. Take the Climate Express when the world's in a mess 'cause of CO2. We're off to Copenhagen, a protest we'll be staging. You can join us too. Denmark's easy to get to, easier than Kyoto. It'll be a blast. But as the Antarctic sinks and those atolls they sink, we better get there fast. Well, let me hear you say ba ba ba. Oh yeah. Uh-huh. All right. We're going where the air is free. Ba da ba ba da da. On the Climate Express, there's a jolly hostess selling vegan sandwiches. An acoustic guitar and a harmonica and songs in lots of languages. From all parts of the earth, the activists will converge by land and sea. The only difficult bit is how are we going to fit in such a small country? Let me say ba 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 da ba. Uh-huh. All right. Oh yeah. We're going where the air is free. Uh-huh. Tomorrow belongs to me. Will the temperatures rise by 6 degrees? Will the Gulf Stream stop and we'll all freeze? We can stop it if we protest. Take a trip on the Climate Express. Ba-ba-ba-da-ba-da. Oh yeah. All right. All right. A Climate Express.
A Climate Express.
Yes, yes.
A Climate Express.
Woo-woo!
Climate Express. A Climate Express. A Climate Express. A Climate Express. A Climate Express.
Mr. President. We write to you with great pride and respect your leadership. You are known throughout our continent as the son of Africa. We are your brothers and sisters from Africa. We represent an alliance of civil society organizations in 43 countries across Africa that brings together a diverse group of people who share a common concern for our continent and the growing catastrophe of climate change. In your inaugural address to the presidency of the world's most powerful nation, you affirmed your commitment to help the world's poor by saying, I quote, "To the people of poor nations, we pledge to work alongside you to make your farms flourish and let clean waters flow, to nourish starved bodies and feed hungry minds, and to those nations like ours that enjoy relative plenty, we say we can no longer afford indifference to the suffering outside our borders, nor can we consume the world's resources without regard to effect." End of quote. We take these pledges seriously, and we intend to hold you to your word. Our rivers are drying, our crops are turning to dust, and unrelenting sun scorches our land, while other areas are ravaged by storms and diseases. Scientists now say the world could warm by 6 degrees Celsius, and by more in Africa. This threatens nothing less than the collapse of our continent. Today, Africa grapples with a challenge that is not of our making. Impacts we had little role in causing. We find no alternative but to look to those nations that contribute most to causing climate change, and to call on them to lead by example. As the world's largest contributor to greenhouse gas concentrations and as the world's wealthiest nation, the United States has a singular duty to ensure that Africa is kept safe from rising impacts of climate change. Yet, we find it failing in this duty, along with other leaders of developed nations you have proposed. 1. That global average temperatures be limited to below 2 degrees Celsius. Yet, this threatens catastrophic harm to Africa, which will likely warm by around 1.5 times this global average. The global emissions be limited to 50% of 1990 levels by 2050. Yet, this risks a 50% chance of exceeding 2 degrees Celsius. And 3, that Annex 1 countries cut their emissions by 80% by 2050, which would rob Africa of its fair share of atmospheric space and limit our prospects of development while we grapple with a more hostile climate. You are coming to Europe to receive a Nobel Prize in Oslo and to attend the UN Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen. You must live up to the dignity of the Nobel Prize when you come to Copenhagen. You must listen to the voice of other countries, including Africa. Our greatest single concern is that the United States seems to be seeking to continue domestic pollution well into the future by offsetting its emission in Africa, further transferring the burden of curbing climate change to those people who had little role in causing it. Furthermore, we are concerned that the United States, by insisting on remaining outside the Kyoto Protocol, has become a pretext for other developed countries to seek to evade rather than implement their legal binding obligations under the Kyoto Protocol. This undermines the only international agreement that establishes binding international emissions targets for developed countries. These positions are unjust as they are unsustainable. We call on the United States and other developed countries to recognize their historic responsibilities for the causes and adverse consequences of climate change and to repay their climate debts to Africa. and other developing countries. Allowing temperatures to rise by up to 2 degrees globally, and thus to 3 degrees in Africa, is a death sentence to literally millions of Africans. We fear for our mothers and fathers, our sisters and brothers, your uncles and aunts and cousins. Your policy on climate change threatens not only our families, but also your own. We implore you not to crush the dreams of our fathers. Yours sincerely, your brother, your uncles, your aunties and cousins from Africa.
Reductions of 45% or more below 1990 levels. And, you know, that is to avoid absolute climate chaos. I mean, the climate scientists have their hair on fire about this stuff. I mean, we're already seeing massive impacts. 300,000 people per year already die because of global warming. We're destroying entire ecosystems. Polar bears, a species that I work on, they're drowning, starving, and even resorting to cannibalism just from the rapid climate change we're already seeing. We're approaching or have already passed tipping points, and the 3% below 1990 levels that's on the table will lead to catastrophe.
Perfectly possible to think of a society actually where our communities are stronger, we have more engagement with our friends and families, where we can still achieve the things that we need to in material terms, food, clothing, and shelter, but our ability to participate in society is strengthened. There's more emphasis on social space, there's more local activity, there's more sense of being able to engage with each other on an everyday basis in a meaningful way, and there is also a sense that this is a dream, this is a way of life, a way of thinking about the world that isn't going to drive us all to ecological destruction.
We do not want to hear any further contradictions from the world governments telling us things that are not there anymore. Our people are dying, the droughts and the floods are killing us. We need to do something now. Thank you very much.
1.5! 1.5! 1.5!
People are really hearing the moral message of climate change that we have, and we're really connecting well with people. and, you know, whether that's the media or whether that's, you know, government negotiators that we talk to or, you know, the UN Secretariat here, people are very moved by what we're doing. And I feel that in the climate movement at the moment, we've had all of the intellectual arguments that we possibly can have over the last couple of years. You know, everybody knows all of the arguments from all the different sides now. And what we need is, rather than arguing with our heads, we need to start arguing with our hearts. And so that's what the Climate Justice Fast is really about. I've lost a lot of weight, and it's quite scary. I've lost about 25% of my original body weight now, and that's the time when doctors say that we start to move into a very high-risk zone. And so, of course, I'm very worried about that. But aside from feeling very, very light and weak, I'm actually in extremely good spirits, and you know, my health feels quite good. But the doctors warned me that, you know, risks could come at any time, so I am worried about that. One of the things that I've really thought about deeply, and I've had a lot of time to reflect during the fast, has been about what sort of world I want. And in 2050, when I'm 65 years old, I always like to think, you know, in those sort of future terms, at the end of this fight, what are we going to end up with? And I think it's going to be a world where people don't entertain themselves on the weekend by going to the shopping mall and consuming shit they don't need. You know, it's going to be a world where we don't aspire to have bigger cars and bigger houses and bigger flat screen TVs. I think that we're going to go through a cultural change where people are going to learn to be happy with enough, where we realise that, you know, greed is one of the seven deadly sins, and we move forward into a world where we can start to celebrate culture and arts and sports and the richer things in life and family and local food, and start to realise how nourishing that is and how healthy that is, how good it is for our bodies as well as for our environment, and we can start to really live in that sort of positive society. So, you know, before the fast, my main hobby is dancing, and I love dancing and health and strength and, you know, my physical body and using it. And I envisage a world where in the future everybody can have the privilege of learning how to dance and to be happy, and that's the sort of world that I want in 2050.
I'll say a bit, and I'm sure Ambassador Lumumba would add to it. On the adequacy of the financing, I think you've already heard. The developing countries have called for an adequate level commensurate with the need. And that could be quantified as a 1.5% of GDP of the developed countries. That could be quantified as the starting point of the $86 billion that the UN says it's a minimum start. That could be quantified as, you know, various levels. What is adequate has to be responsive to the threat. That's what adequacy means for us. It must be responsive to the damage that is already done. I'll give you one indication, and there are hundreds. What does it cost to rebuild an economy that loses 200% of its GDP from a hurricane that is linked to climate change irregularities? What does it cost to do that for 40 countries who simultaneously in any given period of 6 to 9 months experience that? That's what adequacy means. So we can't sit here today and tell you, give us 1 billion per hour. But we do know that the figures that are coming forward so far are not adequate. They are not adequate. On the question of the 1.5 to 2 degrees, look, as I said, 100 countries have estimated under the umbrella of the IPCC that we need ambitious targets. We are now at 0.8, just about, percent increase in temperature since pre-industrial times, 0.8. Imagine what happens if we triple that to around 2. Where would be the predictability and the survivability of small island states? If we go up to an arbitrary figure, which of 2 and over 2 and near to 2 and close to 2, it means that we will lose some of our islands from Indonesia and the Philippines, from the parts of Australia even, and certainly among the small island states, we will go underwater. There is no doubt about that. We have documentary films that we are showing here. You can see for yourself. So I think some of the delegations need a dose of reality. And we bring that. We bring that reality check.
Okay, I'm standing outside Embankment Station with all the other climate campers. There are probably about, I don't know, probably about 100 people here. There's Hannah. Say hello to the
room.
Hi! Yay, where are you going?
Copenhagen.
Amazing. Nick, where are you going?
Lilac.
Lilac coaches. Yeah. But what are you going on the lilac coach for?
Copenhagen, duh.
And what are you going to do there?
Paint pictures.
Paint pictures. Nick's got a plan to be the first painter arrested for his art. I think we're getting Ashton to the coaches, so more updates in a minute. Hello, you are listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Tom Besley.
Oh, I'm Arthur. We're on our way to Copenhagen. We just got on the coach and heading out from the embankment in London. Copenhagen, here we come. Are you excited, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually going down the Strand, I think, and we'll be going past the cop-out, camp-out occupation of Trafalgar Square, which I think is still there. I'm not sure.
Last I've heard, they're still camping out there. And if you don't know, that's a demonstration really connected to the Copenhagen talks organised by Climate Camp. So, you know, there are demonstrations going on all over the world, really. I mean, last weekend there was the wave, wasn't there, which we were both there.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. About 40,000 people dressed in blue. And then, of course, tomorrow's the 16th, is it? That's the day of action. No, is that tomorrow?
Not tomorrow.
Not tomorrow, no.
Tomorrow's the 12th.
Tomorrow's the 12th. Thanks, Al.
Good to get the dates right. Any predictions, Tom, for the coming week?
I'm a bit worried about the police. Yeah. To be honest, like, they sound a lot more heavy-handed and less restrained than, English police can be quite difficult, but recently they've toned it down a bit. How about the politics? That's your kind of specialist field.
I don't know. It seems interesting. I mean, just today, the EU have announced that they're going to be giving 6 billion euros over the next 3 years to developing countries to help mitigate climate change. So that's a real step forward.
What percentage is that of the total that's needed? Is that,
it's hard to say.
That a splash and a drop in the ocean?
Well, I think it's certainly, it's good that something is on the table there. I think there's certainly much more needed. I think it's in the region of a few hundred billion, I think, by 2020, but that's not just Europe that has to contribute that. So things are developing. I'm quite excited about that. The other thing, I guess, we'll have to face is the cold.
Well, actually, breaking news is that it's not too bad out there. Have you got a woolly jumper?
Got a few, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be wearing them all.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, we'll know soon enough. There'll be regular updates from us on the bus all the way to Copenhagen, where we should be arriving at about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Well, let's just see. I mean, it depends on whether the police stop us at the borders. And,
that's true.
We never know. With Climate Camp, the police have a tendency to overreact. So let's just wait and see, and we'll keep you updated.
So we're at Dover now, and we got through without any trouble from the police. That was good.
Yeah, indeed. We are just at the terminal, so I guess the customs is ahead of us, I suppose. We haven't... Oh, okay, well, we've been allowed straight through.
We've got a text saying the campaign against climate change bus, they were stopped for 4 hours at the border and everyone was searched individually. And,
right, so that's breaking it. On the border, on this border?
No, the border going to Denmark.
Okay, so trouble potentially in Denmark.
Everyone into tents to be searched separately.
Something to look forward to? Well, we shall catch up with you all later.
Great, can't wait. Hopefully it'll be a smooth crossing. Those spirits are high. It seems... as long as it doesn't get a hell of a lot colder than this, I guess it will do, won't it?
Yeah, I think so, but we might be allowed to sit inside.
Good.
That is good. Well, this may be the last audio brief from England. So next time it will be in French. Any good in French?
Not really, no.
No, me neither. All right, well, good night, listeners.
Okay, good night. Okay, good morning. We're
good morning.
Good morning, Tom. We're on the bus this morning, and we've just stopped off at a service station somewhere in northern Germany for some overpriced breakfast.
Yeah, we're about 50k from the border. We just drove past a field of wind turbines.
They've been pretty constant, actually. I really noticed them here. There's constantly been turbines on the horizon, and I think that really shows how Germany has chosen to invest a lot of money into renewable energy. They get about 8 or 9% of their energy from renewable sources, and I think some estimates say that's created about 250,000 jobs in Germany, which is really a route that the UK and other countries could pursue a lot more aggressively, isn't it? So let's just talk to one of our fellow passengers. How was your night's sleep, George?
Remarkably good, actually. I avoided the tendency to try and fidget and get comfortable, and it all worked out really well.
It would have been a lot more comfortable on a plane, though, right? Just 2 or 3 hours straight to Copenhagen.
I don't have a cold, which is quite nice. I usually get colds on planes, because apparently now you can't smoke on them. They don't bother to circulate the air anymore. And, And it's nice to travel. I actually feel we've travelled from London to Copenhagen and with a bunch of really nice people. It's been fun, we've had good conversations, and it's been a nice process. And it's like 1,000% more efficient than flying in terms of carbon emissions. So I'm pretty happy with the arrangement.
Do you think also there's a political reason for getting the coach rather than flying?
Well, I think that the clue is the 1,000% more efficient in terms of carbon emissions. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously there is a certain irony to turning up to a climate summit in the most damaging form of transport. Much as I think the importance of this summit is so great that the emissions are relative to the importance of what we need to get out of it are very, very minor as an issue. I think, you know, these articles you get in the media saying, oh, well, there's going to be this many emissions from the summit, it's kind of missing the point, but clearly, if you can get there without flying, I think that's obviously a very good thing. And yeah, no, I'm glad we took the bus. It's been fun, and yeah, pretty good. And we get to witness things like, you know, wind farms consistently. And I think actually, on a sort of slightly serious note, that's one of the good things about travelling. You actually see sort of patterns of things. It's not like, oh, we flew over a wind farm. Just the fact that you see these things consistently. Whereas there are places in the world where people don't just talk about renewable energy, they actually do something about it a little bit, you know, which is a positive example that we can learn from, definitely, I reckon.
Absolutely. Any thoughts on the next border crossing, Tom? We're going to be there in, I guess, half an hour or so, and from reports it sounds quite heavy-handed, doesn't it?
Quite heavy-handed. Well, we heard that I think it was the Stop Climate Coalition, or the Climate Justice Coalition, were held for about 4 hours. That was
campaigning against climate change.
So they were held for about 4 hours. But then we've also had good news that people who've been blacklisted are getting through. And I think as long as we're sensible about things and we leave our knives at home, we'll be all right.
Great. Well, we'll let you know how it goes once we're there. That's bye from us.
And George.
Bye from me. Bye from me. Oh, yeah, and we had singing, lots of singing on the bus, which was nice. Can't do that so much on the plane.
Okay, we've just got to the border with Copenhagen. Buses are slowing down. There are clearly white tents and spotlights that have been put up. I think, to inspect us, can you see anything else from the window?
Lots of police vans, lots of big green, I guess, Danish Polizei vans. Yeah, it doesn't look too busy right now, so hopefully we'll be through here quickly.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And not too threatening either, which
it's
is nice.
Disarmingly old school about the vans, isn't it?
You know? Yeah.
Techno rubbish.
we'll let you know if we get through. Okay, so we're on the border. We've just got through the border checks. It's all quite straightforward.
Yeah, just had to search through our bags and things, but they've let at least one of the coaches go already, so it seems like we might be out of here pretty soon.
Hopefully. We got some news that, one of the German officers told us that the Danish police have estimated between 50 and 80,000 people have come across the border, which means that there are going to be lots of activists there, which is cheering, I think.
Yeah, watch out Copenhagen, it's going to be massive, I think.
Especially today's day of action.
Yeah, indeed. It's going to be a big protest today. Hopefully we'll get there in time, eh, Tom?
Absolutely. But he said it's about an hour from here.
Okay, well, it should be still going on, shouldn't it? That many people don't leave so quickly.
We might get there in time for the end.
What's that, Claire?
We might get there in time for the end.
Have you got any ideas about what you're going to contribute?
Myself is what I'm contributing. Myself.
What more can you give?
What more can I give?
That's everything.
Indeed.
Brilliant. Any closing remarks?
Oh, I'm just looking forward to getting there. at least it's sunny.
Yes, it is. It's a lovely Sunday day. It would be great if we could get an interview with a police officer. Should we try that?
I
don't know if that's illegal.
Later, we could try and speak to someone.
Yeah, not now. I'm doing a show for a radio station in London. Would you mind answering a few questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. We have a special person here for press. I don't know where he is.
No?
You're from a newspaper or?
From a radio station, Resonance 104.4 FM.
I have a look for him. Just a moment, please.
Okay, thanks very much. So, hopefully we'll get an interview with the police. I'll get back to you in a minute.
My name is Bernd Schindler. I'm the press officer of the German police here in this control station.
Okay, and could I ask you just what's the purpose of this operation here?
It's only COP 15, you know, in Copenhagen. And we are here to looking for some weapons or anything else. We hope that the demonstrations in Copenhagen will be calm and quiet, and therefore we are here. And we are searching for people they don't want to make it calm and quiet.
Have you had any problems at all this week?
No, we had no problems. We had only friendly people in this control station the last 2 days. Good. No problems.
That's really good to hear. And so how many people would you say have been coming through here in the last few days?
Oh, that's not possible for me to say it. I don't know. Maybe 100, 1,000. I don't know. Sorry. It's too much. It's too much.
More than you expected, perhaps?
And no, we are had some numbers from people, or we know how much they are in the buses and they want to come here. So, and it's the same. Oh, I don't know. Zahl. Sorry.
Estimate. Or?
Name Zahl. When I write a number, 100. In Germany, we said Zahl.
Tally. Yeah,
tally?
Estimate, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So what was the estimate? What was the estimate?
Sorry?
What was the Zahl?
We don't know, but we are waiting for one bus, for three buses, for 10 buses, and they come all here?
Yeah.
And that's the tally?
Tally, yeah.
Tally,
exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
What we are waiting for.
Okay,
and that's all okay.
You have no official estimate?
No.
No, okay.
And just on a kind of personal note, what do you think of the climate conference in Copenhagen?
It's not my opinion to say something about this. I'm only here for the police and not for my private. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. We have some regulations in the police when you talk to people. It's only police and not my private things to say.
Yeah, of course.
And I have my regulations and I must
follow
this regulation.
What about off record?
Maybe I'm 30 years a police officer.
Okay, so you're always on record.
I know when I had to shut my mouth.
Good.
This is the, we said in German, Weihnachtsmann.
Weihnachtsmann?
Yeah. When we had Christmas at the St. Nikolaus. You are St. Nikolaus.
I am.
Yeah. And where's your beard?
I'm wearing it today.
But maybe it's white.
Yeah, that's true.
We are green, we are red, we are black. We have come to take the power back. We are black, we are green, we are red. We remember what cancer we were said. Lord, take my soul, the struggle continues. Even even if we're nursing the no-deal blues. Sub-Zero carnivals have always been my thing. My cozy pink and silver dancing boots I'll be sure to bring. On a pyre of profit, my future they want to fling. But into being such sweet songs, our street souls will sing. Street souls will sing. Black, we are red, we are green. But can we crystallize that which we dream? We dream of oceans unrisen and our friends out of prison and a hurricane of climate justice blowing and of human kindness overflowing. I think it's gonna rain today. Sub-Zero carnivals have always been my thing. My cozy pink and silver dancing boots I'll be sure to bring. With possibility our movements crackle and sing. We have brought the righteous rhythms to make those movements swing. Make the movements swing. Come back with some seeds and some good ideas and some stories and some myths to tell. Watch me out. Again, we're gonna bring him back, you know, bring him back and put him back. Come on back and put him back, build him up, build him up. Bring it back, yeah, bring him back and build him up, yeah, build it up. Bring it back, yeah, and bring it back and build it up. Bring it back and build it up.
We have the bronze of limitation. I've got to make now. Right now, right now. At home, here, everywhere. We don't not leave here.
Come on,
Tune in to Copenhagen Daily every day from 11 a.m. till noon throughout the UN Climate Conference on Resonance 104.4 FM and online at resonancefm.com.